Yeah. There it is. Thank you. Thank you very much. Where's the clicker? I hope you didn't roll your eyes as soon as I said we're going to talk about money. Here's a cute statistic for you. Here's a number to start with. There are 250 verses in the Bible on faith, and there are 218 on salvation. That's good, isn't it? Thank you. How about this? There are 2,000. I wonder who counted this. There are 2,058 verses dealing with stewardship and or accountability about our money or about our finances. You know, it's an important topic, and we always feel like we want to make excuses for it or something when we start talking about it in church, but we feel like it's not spiritual or something. It is. It is. It's a spiritual topic. I want to work my way through that. It's important to God, and it's very important to us, and we do need to talk about it. But what am I doing here, talking about money? Well, it's because I've travelled a long way. So, first of all, I'm going to talk about myself. I should have put the cringe factor on that bit. But I'm going to talk a little bit about fake news. Nico lent me a lovely book by Paul Zhong that talks about this, and I took a couple of points from that. We are going to talk about money management and stewardship is what we call it in church. It's a good church word. And we're going to talk about some biblical principles, and we're going to talk about some financial principles. So I do need to talk about myself just a little. I feel like apologising for that. So here's me. So there are... I've travelled a long way, not just in years, though that's pretty obvious, and funny hairdos and things like that, but I have travelled away in my Christian faith, and I've also travelled quite a long way financially. And so it's this about the distance that I've travelled, and I do know something about financial breakthrough, especially in the latter years, and it's fairly unusual for someone like me. Now, although I'm not massively wealthy or anything coming close to it, did you hear on the news that Andrew Forrester, who does profess faith in Christ, he gave $70 million to the fire relief? That's, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? $70 million, as if I even know how much money that is. Some people are very rich, and he professes Christ. You know, that's a good thing, isn't it? But mine's different. Far fewer zeros than that. When I say someone like me, I mean my social situation. So I'm divorced. I was divorced after nearly 20 years of marriage, and I raised three teenagers. And I went to university as a single mum. Now, that's unusual because I hope I don't upset anybody, but the majority of single mums are either dependent on family or on government, mostly on government, and I'm different. I'm not. It's been the desire of my heart. It's for all the years of my life that I'm not dependent on the government. And now I'm retired, fairly recently retired, and I'm not dependent on the government. I'm self-funded, and I'm very, very grateful to God for giving me that desire of my heart, for making me this way. And more than one person has asked me how it is that I got to where I am. Because I did come from very, very difficult circumstances. And what I usually say is I worked hard and I've been frugal and I have taken opportunities that God has put before me and He has provided for me. I have sown and I have reaped, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a little while. So there are nearly 25 years between each of these pictures. So in the first one, this was taken in Malaysia. I think I was about 21 or 22. I was married very, very young. And my husband was in the Air Force at the time, and we had a posting to Malaysia. And I was not a Christian, and I had virtually no financial smarts at all. But I had something. I had a God-sown seed. Now, this is something that I remember from my childhood. Many, many years ago, when I was about 12 or 10 or something, my dad was in the Air Force, and I remember him coming home and telling the story of a lady at work who kept telling him that he should buy a block of land here or buy a block of land there and wait for a while and he should make some money like that. And I thought, I wonder why he doesn't do that, and I was only little. And that was all there was to that story, really. But years later, when we were posted to Malaysia, I thought that it would be a good idea if we sold our car, which was nothing special. We only sold it for a small amount of money, but that was our only asset. And we used it for a deposit on a block of land in Melbourne, in Healesville, just north of Melbourne, before we went to Malaysia, because we thought, well, the cost of living is cheaper in Malaysia and we would be able to afford to pay it off. And we did. So that was a seed that God sowed in me from all those years ago. I was not a Christian, but you know, I was chosen from Ephesians, the chapter 1 from Ephesians. I was chosen from before God made the earth, just like you. And God sows seeds in us from a very early time. So that's from my Christian perspective now. I had no clue. I had no clue at the time. So in the second picture, I'm in my middle 40s and I'm a young Christian and I'm no longer married and I've made hardly any progress in financial smarts, but by then I had a good paying job, which I had got at great expense to my poor suffering teenagers because I had been to university. And in the meantime, before all that, I had bought a house and the mortgage was at 18% interest. There'll be some people here who remember that, and other young people who have bought a house, and it makes your heart flutter, doesn't it, to think of 18% interest. But that's how it was at that time. Now, in the third picture, that's nearly now, but I'm a more mature Christian, and I've retired, and I've made many investments, buying and selling, mainly in property. And it involved working very hard. And I now know something about financial stuff, about superannuation and shares and interest rates and the property market. So, that's me. That's why I enjoy encouraging you into the financial freedom that He has for you, into taking up your God-given opportunities. Now, there's more to financial freedom than your finances or from money, because it's about your heart, but I'll get to that. I do love listening to Paul Tresham talking about his plans for a university because of where I've come. I'm a bit fond of saying money's easy for God. You just pray about it, you know. Money's easy for God. The stuff, oh, that's like falling off a log for God. And then Paul comes and says he needs, I can't even remember what, like 10 million a year? Yeah, 10 million a year for years. Yeah, and I go, oh, okay. And it makes my face wobble a bit. But he was inspirational. And if you want to watch that message, it's on YouTube from our website. Go to Vision Christian Family website. Scroll down a little to the YouTube link and watch Paul being inspirational about his plans. So there's my first reason for wanting to do this. But the second reason is, or the other reason, is that it's the beginning of the year, you know, that time when we make all those silly promises to ourselves and, you know, it's better than diet and exercise, right? And this one's really important to God. How many verses? Oh my goodness, 2058, yes. So, you know, there's lots of fake news in church about money, and I got, there's more than this, but I got them from the Paul de Jong book. So here's some fake news about money. Money's evil. Oh, no, it isn't. We need it. 1 Timothy 6 verse 10 says, for the love of money, okay, not money, for the love. We're back to it's about our hearts. There'll be more about that again. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So money is not evil. It's useful and it's necessary, and it's like the other things we need. Like, you know, if you think about food, and if you're struggling with that, you might think that food's evil. No, it isn't. It's useful. It's overeating. That's a bad thing. So it's wrong use of money. That's a bad thing. So you can see what I mean. Money's not good. It's not evil either. But it does have great power to get into our hearts. and we have to stay on guard to ensure that we have and use money in a godly way, and that it does not have and use us. You know, we use money and love people, right? Not the other way around, yes. So second one, God's blessings are spiritual, not material. You know, there are so many verses, most of those in the 2000 bit, that on abundance and prosperity God provides for us. I've put a handout at the door if you would like to pick that up on the way out, and there are 56 of them on there. I just typed up a few on abundance and prosperity. Here's one of my favourites, Proverbs 10:22. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil to it. I love that verse. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it. Here's another one. Here's another bit of fake news. Jesus was poor. Oh, no, he wasn't. Jesus created the universe and he owns everything, top to bottom. He wasn't poor, but 2 Corinthians 8:9 says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that through his poverty you might become rich." Next one, we're Christian. We shouldn't focus on money. Well, here it is. If money decides how and where we live, where we work, our whole future, then we do need to do some focusing on our finances. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a slave to the lender." Now, there's a lot more, but I'll leave that at that, and I want to go on with how we might focus on our finances. So, stewardship, money managing, is the reason that we should focus on our money. And here are the two primary ways in the house of God that we can use to focus on our finances. First of all, biblical principles, and secondly, financial principles, and certainly they go together. So Deuteronomy 8:18 says, "But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth." And our financial principles are primarily education. So we're using websites and books and other people who know stuff, not necessarily Christian. There are lots of good writing out there. So I'm going to start on biblical principles. What sort of attention is healthy attention to money? That's the bit that we want to get to. You know, we do have to maintain our stuff, you know, everything we have to maintain, our washing machine and our mower and the house and every single thing. You know, if we don't, the mower seizes up and the washing machine gets filthy, and money, it runs through our fingers like sand. We have to pay some attention to it, but we need that to be healthy, godly attention. So here are three biblical principles that I've chosen. The first is a story from Genesis. I'll talk about that in a minute. And this is about giving God honour for being our provider. And secondly, it's giving with generosity and tithing. And thirdly, it's sowing and reaping. And I'm going to make a difference between those two. So first of all, the Genesis bit, sort of. There are so many mega rich people in the Bible. I know Solomon springs to mind straight away, and Job, you know, doesn't always spring to mind, but he was like the Bill Gates of the day. He was massively wealthy, and then he went through loads of troubles, and when he came through his troubles, God gave him double. Thank you. He was very wealthy. And then there was Joseph, who went through from slavery to managing the finances of the whole kingdom. And anyway, I'm going to go back and start with Abraham. Now, this is just the first few verses in chapter 13, but in chapter 12, this is where God had called Abraham and various members of his family, his wife and his nephew Lot, out of their home. And he said, "Get out of your country. I'm going to make you a blessing in order that you are a blessing." And God gave him that very wonderful promise. And so he packed up everything and they travelled south. Now it says, they went down toward Egypt. They went south from Haran, but there was a famine in the land. And they didn't really want to go to Egypt, but there was nothing to eat, and so they went to Egypt. And after a while in Egypt, they had a bit of a row with Pharaoh over his wife, Sarai, and I'm not convinced that it was all Pharaoh's fault, but that's another thing. And then, so they had to leave. So they had to leave Egypt, and they went, they went off travelling again. Now, in chapter 13, in the beginning, it talks about Abraham's possessions. And it says that he was very, very wealthy. It says he had massively large flocks of whatever they were, goats and sheep and camels and things, I think. But it also says he had large amounts of silver and gold. So if you're not too fussy about the goat and the sheep, I'm sure you know that having lots of silver and gold makes you very rich. And then in chapter 24, this is where Abraham's servant has gone to get a wife or look for a wife for Abraham's son Isaac. And he says, God has made my master very wealthy. He has flocks and he has gold and he has silver, in order to convince this person that this lady's for Isaac. And so the thing that I want to press on this is that right from this time, Abraham, this is only Genesis, you know, Genesis chapter 13 and 24, and they're giving all of the glory of that amazing provision to God. And this is a very fundamental principle, that we give God glory for his provision for us. Giving with generosity and tithing, you know, we need to be aware to give to the poor. We need to be generous givers. It's a test for our hearts, and it helps people. And tithing, of course, has been mentioned already this morning, and it's an Old Testament principle, and it doesn't have to be a tenth. But we do need to be involved in supporting our church. Now, giving and tithing are just like givens as a Christian, aren't they? You know, we're taught about it all the time, and I want to compare it with sowing and reaping. So, we know, really, what sowing and reaping is. You know, if I go out in my little veggie garden and I put in some silver beet seeds, I'm not even slightly surprised if silver beet grows, right? Okay, I've got a mango tree at home. It's nice this year. And guess what it grows? Oh, you're good. We know what sowing and reaping it is. And the word says, Don't be fooled, don't be tricked, don't be deceived. What you sow, you will reap. And what I want to say is that giving and tithing is not sowing. When you give, if someone's poor and you give something to them, what do you expect back? What do you expect to reap? Nothing. That's not sowing. If I sow, I expect to get back more of those seeds of what I sowed. And tithing is similar. And so sowing and reaping is about doing something with our finances. Of course, it's a whole range of other things, but I'm focused here today. So it's doing something with our finances that is going to expect a return of those finances. And there's a lot of teaching on it in the Bible, but I'll go on. I think this is really important because of the heart issue. There are some godly and very scary things about money, and there's a reason that they're so difficult and so very scary. You know, our heart is a primary testing ground for the way that we give and the way that we sow. And God, I want to say this very clearly, God will not tolerate the worship of money from us. That's the heart thing. There are warnings, and these warnings are very, very strong. You know, in Matthew, it says that God will not tolerate that in Matthew 6:24, and Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5, they drop dead because they lied to the Holy Spirit about money. And Judas was a thief, and he stole from the money bag. And that's in John 12, verse 6. That did not finish well, did it? That did not end well. You know, these are very, very strong warnings. So what's in your heart? You know, I know myself quite well, and I know that things have a tendency to get in my heart, and God has a way of removing things by His grace. And at times it's been very painful for me physically in my flesh. But I am so grateful that He has done that, even though it's meant grief for me. After I finished my university education, it was quite difficult in those days. I think it still is, isn't it, Bev, to get permanency when you finish your studies, to get a full-time permanent job in the education department. And so I agreed to go to Longreach to do my country service so that I could get permanency. Now, at the time, I had my little house at Churchill, and my youngest son was only 17, and I'll always regret that I left him at that time, but I did. I left my house and my son, and I went to Longreach, and I had to live in shared accommodation with some people that you don't really want to know about, and that was really hard. And later on, I got accommodation with some other people a little bit more like me, but I had nothing of my, nothing. I had no furniture, no chairs, no nothing, nothing of familiarity of my own around me. And that was very, very hard. And I came home from Longreach every single holiday on the bus for 17 hours. I couldn't stay there for long. But 3 years, every holiday, I came home. And I really, really needed to see my son. And the very first Easter, the first year that I was in Longreach, just before the holidays, I had a call from my son. And he said, "Mum, the kitchen was just on fire." Oh, my heart. and there was a pot of oil on the stove, and it was burning. And he grabbed it and thrown it out and burnt his hands. And the fire brigade came. And you can imagine, maybe you can imagine, what I came home to that first Easter. And then I had to leave again. And I had to leave it to insurance people and people that I didn't know picking my colour scheme. And so that was very hard. But it did work in my heart. It ripped that love of my one and only house and my stuff. It ripped that out of my heart. And it really, really did a job on me. And so a house has never been in my heart ever since. And what about tiny little precious things? You know, that's a big thing. But little precious things, you know, I can remember at least a couple of times, maybe more, precious little ornaments. I'm not that much of an ornament person, but sometimes someone who loves you gives you something little and precious. And then someone that you don't particularly, that you're not particularly close to, knocks it off and breaks it. Oh, what do? You go, "Oh, you're much more important to me than that ornament." Because it's only stuff, you know? And it's not the person that you love. It's just a little trinket that they gave you. And if it's wormed its way into your heart, then God, in His grace, will help you by giving your heart a little pain when He pulls it out, when it breaks, you know? What's in your heart? There are many, many other things. I'm very wary of my car right now. Because I got my very first brand new car at the beginning of last year, and it's not new now, it's a year old, but I still really, really like it. But sometimes I walk past that car and I think, "Oh, I'm not going to wash you today, I'm not your slave." And I don't want that car in my heart, you understand. Stuff can worm its way in. What's in your heart? What are we going to do about that? You know, there are, there's a way to not let that happen. It's to hand everything, all of your possessions, over to God in your heart, you know, to give God all authority over your bank accounts, over your house, over your car, over your, all of your possessions. You know, does that give you a little wobble in your heart? Why would it? Why would it do that? You know, after the way that Wendy described this morning, the way God loves us and He provides for us, Why would you not completely trust him with absolutely everything of yours? Here's Psalm 50. It will be in a minute. Is that it? Have I got it? I went the wrong way. Here's Psalm 50. I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the insects in the fields are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and everything that is in it. So God's not going to rip you off. He provides for you. He gave you everything in the first place. You know, there are two extremes that the devil loves. Neither of these extremes have very much to do with how much money you have. So one extreme is when you're obsessed with money, when it's in your head all the time. And if you don't have enough, then you're obsessed with how to get your bills paid or even how to get food for the next day. And if you do have enough, then you're obsessed with your income and how to get more. How much is enough? Just a bit more. Either way, you're in your counting house, counting out your money, and that's hardly financial freedom, is it? So the other extreme is that you take almost no notice. You close your eyes and you hope it'll all work out. You might have your head in social media or in anything, in any other stuff, and your money comes and your money goes. See money, spend money. Well, it's going through your fingers like sand, and that might be freedom from thinking, but it's not financial freedom. But there is good gospel news, good gospel freedom available for us because of our Father's plan for us. And he is an abundantly supplying and generous God. But we're involved too, right? So I'm going to go on with the next one, which is financial principles. Now, financial principles, I've also picked three, and I want to mention planning and taking time to do that, and that's really what we don't want to do. We're all so pressured for time, and of course, aspects of education, and about getting some advice. Taking time for planning can be quite involved. It's not just looking at numbers and figuring out where you would like to be this time next year or in 5 years. It's also about the sort of person that you are. So for example, are you a nervy sort of investor? Are you ultra conservative? Or are you still conservative but willing to speculate a little more widely? Or are you a risk taker? You know, there's lots of advice available to you about that sort of thing. And mainly what I want to show you in financial principles is that there's heaps of help out there. There's lots of advice. There are lots of ways that you can get some education about your finances. Certainly just talking to people helps a lot. But this website is one that I just think is wonderful. It's a government website. It's called Money Smart. I have shown it to you before a long time ago. But in the headings it says, managing your money, borrowing and credit, insurance, superannuation and retirement, investing, scams, life events and you, teaching, and calculators and resources. And there are so many calculators in there for your superannuation and for savings plans and for when you buy a house and so forth and for budgeting. That you can do your whole budget on that website. It's really, really helpful. If you were just making a start, I would say go to Money Smart and have a go through that and get going with a few things like that. So, planning and taking time. The next one that I would like to show you is a bank website, and I do know that banks aren't the flavour of the month at the moment, but it's true that they're businesses, they're big businesses, and they want your business. And so there's a lot of education available on their website. You don't have to belong to the bank, you don't have to log in or anything. This is just on a front page, and there are many, many links there to help you understand lots of banking things. Why do we have to do this? I've just got to find a part here. I want to tell you a story, incidentally, about my dad. And he was born in the 1920s, and when he was a young thing, I think about 11 or 12 or something, his dad died. And they were on a farm in Victoria, and so he and his family went from being wealthy landowners, his mum didn't manage at all, to being in very deep poverty in a fairly short time. And then as a very young man, he wasn't even 17, he went off to war, and he saw active service in World War II. And then when he came home, they went through the Depression. So his young years, in that sort of way, were really quite harsh. And so he was not a man who trusted anybody about anything, and it came from all those difficulties. So when it came to his money, he didn't even really trust the banks. He didn't want to put money in the bank. And he didn't understand much about financial principles. But anyway, that's what he was like. Now, the thing is, inflation last year averaged 1.7%. So, well, so what? Well, the thing is, if you're the sort of person who likes to just put money in their mattress or under the bed or something, your money is going to devalue. So, here's an example. For $1 that we have today, this time next year, it will have the buying power. It will be worth, in buying terms, 98.3 cents. Now, that's not much less, is it? But if that was $10,000 in your mattress by this time next year, it would be worth $9,830. So you can see its buying power is going down. Now, you might say, oh, well, that's not going down very much. That's okay. It's still safer there. And after 10 years, it would be worth about $8,500. Now, after 40 years, it would have halved in its buying power. Now, that sounds like a long time, but your working life is much longer than that, I hope. But that's a very low rate, and it might increase, and it'll go down faster. So who enjoys their money's buying power halving in any context, no matter how long it takes? And so that's why we need to get our money to earn some interest, and we need to learn something about interest rates, and that's why the bank websites and Money Smart and so forth are useful for us to learn such things. A few weeks ago, when I was still had a job at school, just a supply job, but anyway, I was invited to supervise a Certificate 1 course for some senior students in finance, and this lady presented it over a couple of weeks. And our kids, the senior kids, they were pretty involved, they were pretty interested. They're pretty interested in money. And the lady, somewhere along the line, said to them, oh, somebody gave me a copy of The Barefoot Investor, she said. And it changed my life. It changed the way entirely that I manage my finances. And now I'm much further ahead than I would have been. And then, a few months ago, my granddaughter, Olivia, who'll be 21 soon, and she said to me, oh, Nan, someone gave me a copy of The Barefoot Investor. And she's a bit of a glamour girl, you know. And she said, and do you know what? I'm not getting my nails done. And I'm not getting my eyelashes done. And I can save $5,000 a year. I said, oh, that's good, Olivia. And she wants to buy a house. And so when people are interested and when you actually do something with your advice, you can see that there's real power in that. And so I want to encourage you to take up the advice. I'll just go back to the story about my dad, because with his not trusting people, he did some funny things. So this particular day, he was washing up, and the phone rang, and he completely forgot that the tap was on, and it sink overflowed everywhere and went right through the house. Was he worried about the carpet? No. He was busy digging up the lino because there was money underneath. It was stashed underneath the lino, and he had to get it all out and dry it all off on the kitchen, table and iron it. And then after my dad died, my mum was cleaning out his things, and she found several glass jars, jam jars, with money rolled up, notes rolled up tight in wads. It was thousands. And so all of that lovely depreciating lazy money was hanging around the house, and it was depreciating. But anyway, it was better than the bank, which could fold up any day now. So we do need to learn what to do with our finances, because it'll go downhill if we don't do something for it. You know, we spend so much time and money, time and energy, I beg your pardon, doing things like shopping at Aldi and then going to Woolies and then looking for the cheapest petrol, and all of those things are good and wonderful. And then we shop for our, I hope you do, shop for our car insurance each year and our house insurance each year to get a better rate. I hope you do all those things. We need to shop for interest rates for our savings as well. You know, there are interest rates are pathetically low, you know, and it's really hard to stay above inflation. But if you're not, well, I want to encourage you to do something about that. There's lots of help out there. What about... Sorry, I've just lost my way. Because I'm the sort of person that I am, I guess, my generation, and certainly a baby boomer, the main way that I have made investments is in property. I've sold and bought property, and that's a good thing for me. I like it because I can touch it, you know, and I can look after it myself if I choose. And I guess I'm a bit like my dad like that. Someone else is not looking after my stuff. It's stuff that I can do. I can do that sort of thing. But if you're the sort of person who likes to invest a little more speculatively, then shares are a very, very popular way to go. And there are financial advisors who will tell you that you need to have some shares in your portfolio. I entirely agree. I'm not particularly good at this. I'm still practicing. I keep practicing in a very small way. But if you would like to learn a lot about shares, this is the CommSec website. And once again, you don't have to belong. You don't have to be a member. There are all of these. I know that's very tiny print. But do you know what CFDs are? Do you know how international shares work? Do you know what exchange-traded funds are? Do you know what interest rate securities are? You know, it's all right there. This gives you a lot of choice with your investing. It takes into account the type of person that you are. And if you don't like to do it just from the websites, there are people who will give you advice. Most banks will give you 1 hour of free advice. After that, it costs, of course, and some financial advisors in an ongoing way can be quite expensive, but it can be worthwhile. Sorry, that just got popped in there. The last one that I want to say to encourage you to go and investigate is to do with your superannuation. If you don't understand your superannuation, if, like as I was for quite a while, I was one of I hope it'll work itself out sort of people. I'm not going to look at that. It's too hard for me. But anyway, I got my head around that and started to investigate my super. It's your money, you know, and you have a choice about the way that it's invested. So is it invested in a moderate way, a balanced way, a socially responsible way, an aggressive way? You know, you have choice about the way that that your own money is invested. And if you understand this, all you've got to go and do is read about this. There's a little link here about investment basics, and there's a link about how QSuper invests. So it explains to you the ways that it invests your money. If you don't understand your super, then I would entirely recommend that you go and work that out. And of course, the third way is to read what other people write. Now, I don't know how many books are written about your finances, but probably hundreds of thousands. But here are three really decent ones. The first three are just secular books. The first one is The Millionaire Next Door, and then, of course, The Barefoot Investor and Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Can you see that each of these titles is philosophically similar? So The Millionaire Next Door means that here are two suburban houses, and in this house, people look pretty ordinary, like me, you know, Rockman specials that they wear, not brand clothes, and pretty ordinary jewellery, and drive a pretty ordinary car, and so it goes. And these people in this house look pretty much the same. However, in this house, if something goes wrong, if they get sick or something goes terribly wrong in their family and they're not able to work for the next 2 months, they're going to be quite desperate because they don't have resources to back themselves up in that time. Whereas in this family, even though there's not a lot of difference in the way that they appear, if something goes wrong like that, they have resources for really quite a long time, a year, maybe 2 years, maybe even longer. They have something to back themselves up in that sort of way. And each of these three books are about that sort of principle. Now the second two, the Paul de Jong one, God and Money and Me, and the Storehouse Principles, are written by Christian people, and they tell you all about biblical principles, and they're very powerful Christian books about money. So a balance of those can be very, very useful. I do want to finish up. I'm taking a long time, I know. To finish up, depending on which fellowship we go to at church, we tend to hear a great deal about being generous and about tithing, about being a giving people, and that's right, it's rightly so. But we tend not to hear a great deal about wealth building. It's a good thing. Building wealth is a good thing. When we have enough money, how much is enough? It frees us. You know, it frees us from the pressures of poverty and debt and dependency, but it also allows us to be helpful when needed. You know, if a member of your family gets into deep trouble and really does need a significant amount of money, are you the one that's able to help them? It's all very well to be helpful to the needy, but what about for later? What about for the future? Would you like to give your children an inheritance as well as a legacy? Do you know the difference between those two words? Yeah? So they are used interchangeably. There's nothing wrong with that. But on the whole, an inheritance is something you leave to somebody, and a legacy is something you leave in somebody. You know, it's the teaching someone to fish, or giving someone a fish and teaching them to fish story. So giving them a fish is the inheritance, teaching them to fish is the legacy. We want to leave our children both of those things, don't we? And I want to leave you with Psalm 37, which I'm going to read a few verses to you. From the beginning, I'll just read a few. Don't follow after the wicked ones or be jealous of their wealth. Don't think for a moment that they're better off than you. They and their short-lived success will soon shrivel up and quickly fade away like grass clippings in the hot sun. Keep trusting in the Lord and do what is right in His eyes. Fix your heart on the promises of God and you will be secure, feasting on His faithfulness. Make God the utmost delight and pleasure of your life, and He will provide for you what you desire the most. And verse 25, I'm going to read a different version. I once was young, but now I'm old. Not once have I found a lover of God forsaken by Him. Nor have any of their children gone hungry. Instead, I've found the godly ones to be the generous ones who give freely to others. Their children are blessed and become a blessing. Amen. Our musicians, I hope, are going to come and play something. And if you this morning, if you are upset or anxious about anything, I would really like to pray for you. If you would like prayer for your finances, for your biblical principles or your financial principles, please come and someone will pray for you. And if you're not well this morning, please come. Hallelujah.